Thank you for helping us make Budget and for more than 4.5 million downloads of Issues Etc. in 2017. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio Incorporated has been independent and in the black for almost 10 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening, thanks for your prayers, and thanks for your financial support of Issues Etc. live and on demand, and for our 24/7 talk and music stations. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We'll be looking ahead, back and ahead, into the world of national politics. It's only, what, 5 days into January. It is already, well, as crazy as it was 5 days before the end of 2017. Mark Hemingway joins us. He's a regular guest and senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be back.
If we could do a little wordplay first for 2017, what was kind of the word that typified national politics in 2017, as far as you're concerned?
Well, this is a surprisingly Barbara Walters approach for you guys. Let me see. I don't know. I guess I would just say silly. I mean, I don't know if that quite projects the sort of, you know, gravity of the issues we're dealing with, but it just seems like so many of the stories that we dealt with from day to day, you know, turned out to be, you know, overhyped and overheated or whatever. So I don't know. I just felt like everyone had sort of, you know, set professional responsibility aside all around, be it the people in office and people trying to hold them accountable.
If you were going to pick a word to kind of act as a predictor for 2018, what would that be?
Sorry, it's hard to get it down to sort of any sort of crystalline sense, but I would say, responsibility. I mean, I think now we need to get to a stage where we've sort of accepted the reality of the fact that a man like Donald Trump is president with all his flaws and odd virtues at this moment, and settle down and deal with that in a responsible fashion, and figure out how we can best use this situation to move the country forward, essentially.
So what would you say, everything's kind of being viewed through the kaleidoscope right now of 2018, of Steve Bannon's departure from Camp Trump in more ways than one, and this tell-all book by Michael Wolff that recounts a year in the White House called Fire and Fury, and it seems the only thing anyone is able to talk about now. What do you foresee for the coming year in terms of national politics?
Well, you know, like I said, I was just sort of being optimistic when I just said responsibility should be the watchword going ahead. As this Wolff book proves, you know, people are more than willing to basically indulge what amounts to, you know, purely gossip. Now, I realize it's sort of an inherent, you know, contradiction because Trump has always thrived in this environment. I mean, in one way, he launched himself to national prominence with learning how to exploit New York's, you know, extremely gossipy press, you know, for his benefit, you know, and, you know, now that he's sort of, you know, complaining now that he's the victim of, you know, a well-known sort of gossip writer, you know, a lot of people are sort of, you know, rolling their eyes. But the fact of the matter is just because Trump isn't a terribly reliable source doesn't mean that, you know, Wolf's book's terribly reliable either. So I just think that people need to calm down and focus on what's important. You know, what has Trump actually done? You know, what is he actually doing, you know, that has the force of law that's going to affect the day-to-day lives of Americans? And they need to then subsequently step back, you know, even further and look at his actual performance in doing those things, and then evaluate the man and the White House and our institutions on, you know, actual tangible metrics rather than just sort of the general drama and hysteria surrounding, you know, Donald Trump. You know, I realize it's hard to do that because, you know, Trump, you know, sort of cultivates that air of drama himself, and he's always done that. But it doesn't change the fact that a lot of people who know better in Washington, D.C. and should have figured out how to deal with this, you know, sort of crazy man by now aren't reacting, I think, in a responsible way to that. And the Michael Wolff book is sort of, you know, a prime example of, you know, this is a moment that calls for, you know, more responsible journalism. And here we have a situation here where, you know, major White House figures gave a guy who's well-known, a well-known gossip monger, and who's also well-known for betraying sources, so sort of premium access to the White House, and you know, he wrote exactly the kind of book you would have expected Michael Wolff to have written.
When you use the word responsibility, could the president help himself a lot, or at least begin to mute, if not silence, some of his more vocal critics by behaving responsibly to begin with?
I mean, you know, like I said, Trump makes it hard himself to step back and give him credit for the good things that he's done in terms of the way that he responds to things. Certainly, I've talked to a lot of people who are Trump supporters, and they say, you know, I'd like a lot of things about Trump when I voted for him. You know, I'd like a lot of the things that he's done. I'd like a lot of the people he's surrounded himself with. I just wish he would stop tweeting, you know, or doing all these other little niggling things that aren't really important in the grand scheme of things. You know, you just don't need to tweet about nuclear war with North Korea. Like, you just don't need to do that. You know, there's oftentimes not a lot of things to be gained by, making public pronouncements on things. But, you know, for better or for worse, Trump in a lot of ways is very reflective of the American people and where they are right now. I mean, a lot of his worst tendencies are our worst tendencies. And I think that's one of the most unsettling things about the era is, you know, we've always cultivated this image of our leaders as these aspirational people, the George Washingtons and the Abraham Lincolns of, you know, unimpeachable, you know, moral virtue. And now we have a guy who, for better or worse, is, you know, one of us. And it's not just that we want to have a beer with this guy. It's that we probably have had a beer with a guy who's just like him, and we weren't sure how we felt about the experience.
The tax cut bill was the first piece of major legislation that passed last year, and it took almost the entire year to do it. What will be the next major legislative issue in Washington?
So this is the question that sort of everybody's asking right now, because, you know, with the loss of the senator from Alabama, you know, I think the Republicans have a 51-seat majority. It was already hard for them to agree on enough things that they could get something major passed through Congress, and now this makes it even harder. You know, the thing that Trump has always wanted to do since the beginning, and it very much fits with his brand, is some sort of big infrastructure bill, and I imagine Democrats would like to do that. But the Republican congressional leadership has made it very clear that they do not want to be in a position to be spending lots of money on stuff, and that there's no way to do an infrastructure bill that doesn't sort of do that. And the Trump administration keeps pushing infrastructure, but I don't see that happening. You know, nobody really knows what's going to happen at this point in time. I forget, there was a year sort of late in the Clinton presidency, like 97 or something, where they referred to the sort of the year of small ball or whatever, where they focused on getting a lot of small stuff around the margins through Congress. And I think that's what the Republican Congress needs to focus on in the next year. They need to, like, find lots of key strategic issues that appeal to voters that aren't as big as healthcare reform or tax reform or immigration or, you know, super controversial, and just make it look like Congress is functioning or getting stuff done. And hopefully that will appeal to voters and beget more and bigger successes. But there's the big problem in the next year, which is that there's an election in November, and it's entirely possible that Republicans are going to lose control of one or both houses of Congress after November. So, you know, when that happens, the dynamic changes entirely. You know, if Democrats control one or both chambers of Congress, all of a sudden, you know, Trump crossed the aisle to pass a big infrastructure spending bill that, you know, benefits a lot of, you know, strategic, you know, Democratic congressional districts or something, that all of a sudden infrastructure becomes a lot more likely. But for now, I think Republicans need to figure out, you know, how exactly it is they're going to play small ball. But no one really knows, and a lot of people are asking that very question.
Does a midterm election for where you have the slim majority in the Senate, a majority in the House, and a president of your party, at least in the White House, does that paralyze any kind of legislation, or does it kind of spur them to do what you were talking about before, get a lot of little things done?
Well, I don't know. I mean, on one hand, you know, during election years, congressmen like to be doing a lot of campaigns, so often they're away from Washington, and that makes it a little harder to get things done. On the other hand, the Republican Congress looked so dysfunctional and got so little done last year that they definitely felt compelled to pass tax reform, because if they didn't, they were going to look like abject failures. So, you know, I think that actually did spur them to do it. And also, though, I feel like, you know, the Trump hysteria involving gossip and tweets and all that stuff aside, I do feel like there are some things happening that it does feel like Trump finally has a little bit of momentum. Certainly on the foreign policy front, you know, what's going on in Iran and other places suggests that the world is responding positively to the Trump presidency in some ways. Certainly the economy is just absolutely incredible. And on some level, you know, that's a reflection of Trump. So I think, you know, it might be time to just, for the public to just feel that there's a little optimism in the air. And I think there's a sense of that. But, you know, there's still lots of other things that are bogging down the White House. So it's just a question of how much they're willing to invest in whatever glimmers of hope are emerging at this particular time.
How much will we be talking about North Korea in 2018?
Well, I think we're going to be talking about it a lot in the meantime because, you know, the Winter Olympics are happening in South Korea right now. But it's very hard to tell. I mean, North Korea has absolutely been a rogue regime for a very long time. I don't know what there is specifically to say about the Trump administration's approach to North Korea, except to say that it is at least different. You know, certainly, you know, over the last, you know, 20 or 30 years, as American presidents have maintained various, you know, sort of strategic, sort of muted strategic approaches to North Korea, not commenting a lot on what's going on. North Korea has been getting more aggressive, more belligerent, and obviously became a nuclear power during that time. So, you know, something different needs to happen, and what Trump is doing is definitely different, but different doesn't necessarily mean better, and it's very hard to tell at this point in time.
You had mentioned the economy, and by virtually every major measure, it's booming. It's kind of going a little bit crazy. Who is that going to benefit in 2018?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, certainly there was some evidence immediately in the wake of the tax cut that the corporate tax that was benefiting American workers. Certainly a lot of major corporations made a big show of, you know, trying to pass on bonuses and do hiring and other things as a result of the tax cut. The tax bill is sort of tricky to sell in that sense because one of the biggest problems of the tax cut was the fact that America's corporate tax rate was ridiculously high compared to other countries. But anytime you start talking about cutting taxes for corporations, it looks like you're looking out for big business, not the little guy. And, you know, there needs to be a tangible connection that's obvious to people that, you know, what's good for business is going to be good for them as workers. And I don't know if we've clearly drawn that connection yet, but certainly on all other fronts, you know, everyone's 401ks are obviously doing better because of the stock market. And Obama was the first president in American history who didn't have, you know, GDP growth, you know, over 3% for a year. And, you know, GDP growth is way up. Certainly part of the reason why the Dow hit 25,000 so quickly after hitting 24,000, it was the shortest time in history that the Dow has drawn up 1,000 points, was because there were strong jobs numbers. So, you know, as long as we have good job growth and we have good economic growth to go along with that, it's going to be, you know, Trump's going to be a lot more formidable to beat in 2020 than people realize, you know, that, you know, especially since they're focused on the crazy and not the tangible achievements.
Two quick final questions for you, Mark. What will be the top foreign policy issue in 2018?
Oh, boy. That is, Well, the thing with foreign policy is you never know what's going to be the top foreign policy issue because, you know, all it takes, you know, is another 9/11 or Benghazi or something like that, you know, particularly in a world, you know, that's become accustomed to terror attacks to sort of realign our priorities. But I do think that in terms of, you know, foreign policy, I think, you know, diplomacy in the Middle East is going to be kind of the big thing. You know, certainly Trump has been empowering Israel and he's been also empowering all of the people in the Sunni states that are opposed to Iran to sort of, you know, get the band back together and hopefully everybody can sort of contain Iran and form, you know, more traditional allegiances in the Middle East that Obama upset. And, you know, at the same time, we'll be watching what goes on in Iran. But that's going to all require a lot of sort of, you know, tricky diplomacy in the Middle East. And I think so far, militarily, we've been doing a good job of reassuring the Middle East that we're going after ISIS and crushing them and really doing things to earn goodwill among countries that were previously doubting us, like Saudi Arabia. So it'll be interesting to see what they do to sort of keep that going and, you know, reassure our traditional allies in the Middle East to stand with our interests against Iran and some other things.
Finally, then, how soon will the first Democrat announce his or her run for the White House?
That's a really good question. It seems like every election cycle, it just keeps getting pushed back further and further. I mean, I obviously, I would say, I mean, it passes prologue, probably get something early in 2019. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of Democrats end up throwing their hat in the ring because there will be this impression that Trump is vulnerable, you know, whether it's, you know, justified or not. And there is value, particularly if you're in a candidate that doesn't have a lot of name ID or resources right away, to getting your name out there first and getting everyone talking about you for a couple of weeks before someone else throws their hat in the ring. So it could be, I'd say, you know, early spring 2019, maybe.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard. You can read his columns under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Mark, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
On the other side of the break, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Chris Rosebro. Our weekly feature with him this week in Pop American Christianity Today. We're going to talk about the prophetic words of 2018. Stay tuned.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Children are a heritage from the Lord, but what of those who've not been given the gift of a child? The cross of barrenness affects not only childless couples, it affects the family, friends, and pastors who love and care for them. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm partnering with Emmanuel Press to publish the second edition of my book, He Remembers the Barren, a story about the hope and contentment found only in Christ, no matter the cross we bear. Visit emmanuelpress.us to learn more. emmanuelpress.us.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
Thank you for helping us make budget and for more than 4.5 million downloads of Issues Etc. in 2017. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio Incorporated has been independent and in the black for almost 10 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening, thanks for your prayers, and thanks for your financial support of Issues Etc. live and on demand, and for our 24/7 talk and music stations.